What if the greatest threat to your organization isn't lurking in the shadows, but is accelerating right in front of you? In a world where AI can uncover vulnerabilities in minutes, where it once took weeks, and where nearly two-thirds of organizations don't even know where all their data lives, the rules of cybersecurity are being rewritten in real time. The 2026 Data Threat Report reveals a stark reality. Data is expanding faster than our ability to protect it, attackers are moving at machine speed, and the race to secure what matters most is no longer theoretical, it is now happening right in front of us. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talos Security Sessions podcast. To help us understand how to get a grasp on this enormous transition, Liz Kelly, co-producer of the Talos Security Sessions podcast, met up with Scott Crawford, Information Security Research Head at 451 Research, and Todd Moore, Global VP and GM of Data Security Products at Talos, on the floor of the RSAC 2026 conference in San Francisco. Here's the conversation.
Thank you, Scott, for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here.
And Todd?
Thank you. And it's a pleasure being here with you.
Okay, so 70% of the 2026 Data Threat Report respondents say that the speed of AI is their primary AI security concern. Is it because of adversarial use of AI is opening new attack vectors, or could it be that it is amplifying existing vulnerabilities? Scott, we'll start with you.
Yes. It is all of the above. And worth note in the acceleration of AI-enabled attacks is that one of the findings we had in the data threat report, as you know, Todd, was that respondents reported the greatest growth in AI and LLM-based attacks was those aimed at exposing sensitive data. So that's very much top of mind. It's not just the functionality. The functionality accelerates attacks in both speed and scale and level of detail in terms of what they can discover about vulnerabilities and exposures in a target and how they can exploit those. So all of that comes together to concern organizations, and sensitive data is at the center of their attention when it comes to how do we defend against this scale of attack.
Absolutely, Scott. I think you hit it right on the head. Sensitive data is the core, and it underpins all these AI systems. In terms of how the vulnerabilities shifted, to your point, I mean, same things we were always worried about before are still there. And it's amazing what AI can find that we had forgotten about. And so I think to the part of the question is, it is exposing existing vulnerabilities, and it's just amplifying those to us. But the other point, as you mentioned, Liz, is there are new attack surfaces coming. It's amazing to me with this agentic AI and the amount of agents in our systems, how quickly they can move throughout the different parts of our organization and find just gaps. And with the power that comes from the knowledge that you can share at really an exponential scale, more and more new vulnerabilities are coming out. But to protect against that, don't get scared. I think as you were heading, is there are ways to protect. The existing sort of defenses do work to some extent, but we do have to build new defenses. And I think focusing on the data, coming back to that point, Scott, is going to be the key. Understanding who's accessing the data, why they're accessing it, and what can we do to protect how we're getting there.
And agentic AI can do great things for defenders as well, too. It can reveal the things that need to be remediated, but it's going to reveal them much more quickly and at a larger scale than I think we've become used to. That's already a problem for organizations. In our surveys of security operations, threat detection, and response, organizations consistently report more than 40% of alerts that they cannot address in a typical day in their security operations center. That volume is going to explode with the explosion in agentic functionality. But agents can be harnessed for good as well, too. They can assess the attack surface. They can find vulnerabilities. They can help remediate them as well, too. We're still in the early days of that. We're still exploring what can be done with agents. For that matter, we're still exploring what the security issues around agentic functionality really are. These are things that can reason. They can make decisions. They can act with a fair degree of autonomy, depending on how they're prompted. They can use tools. So those can all be really good things, and people have found really advantageous uses for those in their everyday work. Putting those to work for security is going to be a definite plus, but putting them in the hands of the adversary gives the adversary leverage as well, too. So it's going to be interesting times over the next few years, as we're already seeing here at RSAC.
I And just to respond to that, because I think you're right. I mean, I focused on the negative at first when I think about agents and what they can find from a weakness perspective. But you're absolutely right, Scott. I mean, agents are going to, and all the power that they can harness is going to work for the good for us in terms of, you know, giving us the idea of where are the vulnerabilities and where the gaps are. Well, one element I'm kind of going a little bit off base here is we talk a little bit about here at the show is just around quantum computing and how AI can help us really find where is weakened cryptography keys. And, you know, when a quantum computer does exist, and it will, you know, post-quantum cryptography is going to be a key way to defend against that. And, you know, we want to make sure that AI is helping us protect us against that quantum computer, not team up with quantum computers and build this new superpower that actually finds holes for quantum computers to get into, you know, our data and really harvest now, decrypt later, but even more importantly, break some of the protocols and signatures we already have. So it's a fun world we live in, isn't it? I got to tell you these days.
Is it an Irish blessing that may you live in interesting times?
I'm happy with that.
They'll certainly be interesting.
Well, right, we do live in interesting times.
Exactly.
So effective data governance is the foundation of AI governance. However, the Data Threat Report displays a worrying data governance gap, lack of data visibility and lack of encryption across the data ecosystem. What are the key reasons for these gaps and how can we resolve them?
From our take and from talking to various CISOs and security professionals, we do know from our own report that the amount of unstructured data being created by AI and these agents we just got done talking about is just unprecedented. I mean, it's so much new data being created and it's being littered all over the place. It's going in cloud, it's going in storage arrays, it's going on-premise. And I think the word that you used there was around visibility, Liz. And it's really having enough sensors to be able to find this new data and to be able to characterize it and decide, you know, what they want to do with it. I don't think there's not enough encryption employed. I think you want to have just the right amount of encryption, but visibility and observability is really the key. If you can't see what you don't know, how can you fix the solution or provide an answer to a problem? And so I feel that, you know, as the tools get better and as we get a more way to harness how we use AI and where prompt and responses go and what agents can touch and can't touch, I think we'll have a better idea of focusing in on where that new data is, what's most important to us. And then once we have that information, we obviously know how to apply the controls. So it's a tough problem. I mean, I think one of the things I will mention from the Data Threat Report, the metric I do recall, is only 40% of organizations, I think it was actually 39% of organizations, know where all their data is. And that's kind of scary. I mean, that means that, I don't know if that 39% is telling the truth. Scott, I don't know what you think about that. I think it's probably less than that. But that's still 60% of organizations at least have no idea where all their data sits today.
It's a really tough problem because data is created constantly on endpoints, in networks, in data centers. And you're right, organizations don't always have very good visibility into that. Often, the majority of the time, according to the findings that we have, in the report. But it's interesting how many things lead back to data quality, data visibility. The most widely cited issue in the study, as far as limiting AI adoption, was poor data quality or poor initial data governance. So the response to the Data Threat Report see data being both the beginning and the end of a lot of what they... They can't adopt AI the way that they want to because of poor data quality, poor data governance. And that in turn means poor visibility into where data is, how it's handled, its integrity, its preservation, use cases to which it's put, authorized access and use and modification of that data and content more widely. And yeah, there are controls, and they're very good controls. Cryptographic controls on data have evolved considerably over a couple of generations and just in human terms now. But people have tools all over the place. 83% of respondents to the Data Threat Report cited a perceived lack of compatibility or capability across their tools with each other. Only 36% of respondents are confident in their understanding of their data security tools. So there's a lot of tool sprawl. They come from a lot of providers. It's interesting that Talos has an approach to consistency. That's just because of all the domains that you cover with your data security products, encryption and key management as well too. But most organizations don't have anywhere near that approach to consistency in how they're managing data security and the tools to assure data security like encryption. So organizations still have a long ways to go.
I think one of the things you mentioned there, and I skipped over a little bit about the encryption, it isn't a very important control when it comes to protecting information. And there's tokenization. There's other types of protection and data masking. But what I find I'm talking to folks is it's kind of a maturity cycle, right? You mentioned the visibility, observability. Finding all that critical data and having those sensors tell you where it's at, and then, you know, understanding the risk around it. Unfortunately, a lot of organizations stop there. They don't take that encryption or data protection step. And that's what we're finding. And from a Talos perspective, we really truly believe if you're going to call yourself a DSPM company, data security posture management, if you're going to call yourself a visibility company, you've got to have that remediation, that next step. It really is. Visibility is so important. Risk assessment is so important. Finding that critical data. But please, 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 if it's critical to you, tokenize it, encrypt it, make it hard for AI and AI agents to get access to it, or even other machines or humans, because otherwise you really are putting your data, you know, at jeopardy to be lost.
One of the key things we've heard about agentic AI adoption here has been, you know, the increased production of output. And when it comes to operational management tools, increased production of analytics, increased production of observability data, which is just more data that teams have to deal with when it comes to addressing the problem. All this documentation, all this visibility into the problems, and not nearly enough emphasis on resolution, remediation, and dealing with the problem, resolving the problems as they come up. There are, we expect, you know, after this year's RSAC, we expect future years to see more about remediation and resolution of problems and leveraging agentic technology to do that. But in the meantime, surfacing all this data just creates more. I mean, you said it yourself a few minutes ago, that organizations just don't, you know, there's so much data that they just can't get to in their monitoring environment, let alone deal with remediation in all these respects. So as agentic functionality increases our visibility and the actionability of what we see in monitoring and discovering data and data management processes, the remediation aspect of that is going to have to follow. And that's what we're going to expect to see in coming years at this conference.
I we're seeing a trend there as well, too. I'm curious, Scott, what you think. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of times you get the visibility, you understand what's wrong, and then there's a manual process to encrypt or add those data protection controls, whatever method you're using, mechanism. And I think what we're seeing being asked, pulled from us, from our customers, is given the number of agents and the number of agents in our systems and the number of interactions, that we've got to get more to this automatic remediation. It's got to be orchestrated. It's got to be active. Automatic, it's got to be proactive. And, you know, I think years ago, being at RSA, there was such a pushback from any sort of automation when it came to that remediation piece, because everyone's so scared you're going to break my downstream systems by putting that in place. But if you think about how AI or just data in general, once it leaks, it's out there and it's never coming back. So I think if I was a CISO, I'd think about it, you know, would I rather stop and break maybe something downstream, but protect something really critical to my organization? Or would I let it go out and hope for the best? And so I do think that we're going to hear a lot more. I appreciate you saying that, more about proactive or automatic remediation. I think you said you're going to hear more about remediation here at the conference. I don't know what you think more about that proactive, automatic, based on your policies coming your way.
Absolutely necessary. I mean, we tend to think of that as closed loop, a closed loop approach to security. But it can't be completely closed. It has to continue to take inputs. It has to be open to continuous improvement. It has to be open to quality assurance. So we've seen approaches, you know, for agents that could do red teaming, agents that could do blue teaming on the defensive side. We've seen agents, some introducing remediation functionality as well too, but there still has to be the added step of making sure it's going to perform as expected. So that closed loop has to include QA, has to include continuous improvement. We've already had some incidents of some cloud service providers inadvertently deleting to some customers were probably critical functionality in the course of remediating an issue that was discovered with agents. Agents put the work under remediation. So we have to have visibility into what they're doing as well, too, and that they perform as expected. So interesting future. I mean, the potential is really there. We are beginning to see the seeds of the potential for what it can be in the not too distant future. And this space is moving incredibly fast.
Sure is. My gosh, last year at RSA, agent was just a twinkle in everyone's eye. You know, I mean, I went to some presentations and people were just kind of guessing what the future is. And I don't know about you, Scott, but I've actually created an agent myself and I had to do work and it's powerful. It's kind of fun. It's kind of cool, you know, but I think the time is the time is now. It's really happening at this point. Yeah.
You've seen the reaction of investors, and I think some of those are firsthand experiences. I've created some functionality in market research that would have taken a team of more than a few people, 2 to 4 weeks at least, to do a lot of, you know, digging, finding, scraping, whatever, to pull together some across the market information about the markets that we cover. And I put an agent, co-working, co-piloting agents, however you want to think of those, to work on the problem. And through a few iterations, within a couple hours, I had a pretty complete inventory of what I was looking for. And that was just in an evening. So the promise is just astonishing.
So we've talked about encryption. So given the central importance of encryption to data security strategies, how prepared are we for the threat that quantum computing poses to encrypted data today?
So I have to lay out the problem a little bit. Quantum computing is fundamentally probabilistic, which means that if you can harness probabilistic algorithms on a problem, then it can iterate through probabilities, several of them simultaneously. So what had been historically, you know, a linear sequential, like a Monte Carlo type analysis, many of those analyses can be done simultaneously by quantum computing just by virtue of the fact that of the quantum states, that the basic building blocks of physical reality, how they respond in those kind of situations. And it greatly accelerates the ability to solve problems based on that probabilistic approach. As it turns out, in cryptography, there does exist an algorithm, more than one actually, for doing that analysis of things like public-private encryption key pairs and the ability to iterate through those and what had been in the past a classically improbable, infeasible way to break those keys through brute force and doing a linear iteration through every possible combination of factors for those keys. Many of them can be done simultaneously by these kind of algorithms, and patterns can be recognized in those assessments. Recognition of those patterns accelerates the discovery of keys far faster than was even possible with classical computing. A lot of cryptography, public key cryptography in particular, is dependent on the infeasibility of classical computing to factor those keys. It's just not theoretically possible by brute force. Quantum algorithms greatly accelerate that, which means that the risk of exposing public keys that exist today goes up. It's very fast compared to classical computing. So that's the risk. A lot of encrypted data and data that's encrypted using public key cryptography as part of the means for encryption, that data is at risk because of the potential for discovery of those keys. So that's what we're facing today in terms of reality going forward. So we are basically in an arms race against those with competent quantum computing able to discover those keys. Now, the good news at this point is that it's not yet feasible for today's quantum computers. But great advancements are being made in their capability in areas such as error correction. When you're looking at the state of photons from one state or another, it's just a packet of light, if you think of it that way, which means it is very susceptible to errors, to noise in the environment. So correcting those errors in quantum computers can greatly accelerate their ability to attack quantum problems, including the discovery of public encryption keys. So that's the arms race that we're up against this time. But advancements are being made in parallel with advancements in quantum computing. So we have a shot at being prepared for the post-quantum world, and you have visibility directly into that, Tom.
Yeah. No, that was a really good description, Scott. I got to tell you, that's one of the best descriptions I heard of the problems that we're facing. Maybe I'll focus more, you know, on how we can counter that a little bit. I mean, the problem's there. We don't know the time frame when that stability and, you know, we get to that point. But, you know, it's big enough of a potential issue. And there's good sides to that quantum, all that physics that we just talked about, solving those problems. There's positive sides, as you said earlier in our podcast. But there's also the negative side of breaking the asymmetric cryptography and the public key cryptography. I think that the standards bodies around the world have taken notice. It's impressive that we do have algorithms already available to us to counter this attack. And we also have regulations that say by 2035, here in the U.S., NIST has said, you know, we're going to deprecate some of those existing algorithms. And so there's another arm race or another race that's going on right now. Is 2035 is 9 years away. And I would say one of the things I'm sort of impressed by this show is 3 years ago, when we first started talking about, you know, PQC, post-quantum cryptography, quantum computers, people would roll their eyes, not show much interest. We're seeing a lot of questions. I think in every one of my customer interactions here, there's questions about what can we do now? How do I discover? How do I understand where I'm going to be at risk? What's the threat? And start implementing. And I think we have a lot to do in the next. And I guess it's funny, you know, the regulated industries are ahead of others. And regionally, I think Asia Pacific actually is more concerned than the U.S. in some aspects. I've seen the U.S. government and U.S. financials get really ahead of it, regulated industries. But I would say APAC is very much trying to figure out what they're going to need to do to be prepared. Europe is right there behind them. So a lot of good energy in that area. And again, the good news is we have, you know, a solution there, need to implement it. And I guess my last point is crypto agility. And I don't know if you hear that, Scott. I'm curious when you're talking to people. But, you know, the algorithms of today most likely will change. You know, we talked about AI and post-quantum. There's a good chance that there's going to be deficiencies found in some of these algorithms that we don't even know about yet. So new algorithms are going to be invented, and we have to make sure our systems are able to quickly deploy those algorithms to protect. But I'm telling you, this one's exciting. You just never know. I mean, geez, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor, but, you know, a quantum computer could arrive 2 years from now, could be 2 months from now. I mean, who knows? Who knows? And we need to get prepared.
This is a field where innovation can completely upset timelines and expectations. And, you know, Peter Shore doesn't come around every day. The inventor of one of the better known algorithms for attacking conventional encryption keys. So the pace of innovation is really pretty, it's astonishing how fast things are changing in that field. I mean, you hear some of the proofs of concept around things like improved error correction. It sounds like, well, now we can crack the key of maybe, you know, however many digits. It's not very long or big key compared to the size of practically used encryption keys today, which are quite long. I mean, very large numbers we're talking about, which are very virtually impossible to factor with classical computer. But any changes, any advancements in the ability to understand and to identify ways to advance quantum computing really is just a factor of the innovators in the field that can come up with new ideas and how they can apply them to this particular opportunity. So, yeah, we're 9 years out, we think, at this point, from a feasible approach to having to require post-quantum encryption. But that could change depending on the pace of innovation in the quantum computing field and the discovery of new algorithms, which, you know, they don't grow on trees. These probabilistic algorithms are difficult to discover and ascertain, but now we have AI working on problems that humans could not even conceive of solving not that long ago. So for all that quantum computing can do to parallelize and increase the amount of horsepower, if you will, applied to things like key encryption, we have that same sort of technology applied to discovery of fundamental principles in nature that could be applied in quantum computing to accelerate what can be done with these innovations. So it's really exciting times all the way around. And I expect to see a lot more about quantum computing as well, too. Maybe a few RSAs down the road, but it's happening already.
Maybe we should reconvene in RSA Conference 2035 and revisit this conversation and see where we've come.
I'm happy to do that. We'll be
next year first, but obviously in 2035 as well, too, Scott.
Right. We'll be here. All right.
Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talos Security Sessions podcast series. Not just for the next one, but for our collection of highly useful and always relevant conversations. We will be back again soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, on behalf of Liz Kelly, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.